So what's happening right now is that we are recording at my house. There are a bunch of kids that are trying to sleep.
This is how Lehan sounds like when he's scared. He's really scared that his kids will try to barge in.
Yeah, I am actually.
He's really quiet.
Yeah, I do not. Yeah, so they're really insane. I think they're really, yeah. So anyways, it's a very weird setup for us. I'm actually in my pajamas. So
me too.
And Dorn as well. So we're kind of like on a very chill vibe. So hope it will be like a very chill episode maybe, Dorn. Mm-hmm. So we hosted a bunch of vendors.
Israeli.
Mostly Israeli. So first, I've known Cube for many years now. I think since you guys started. And I think we're both kind of fans of Cube in a way. And we always kind of like talked about the idea of having Cube in our stack. And last year, I actually implemented Cube in production at ZipRecruiter. It was an amazing experience. I love your product. And I think your approach is probably, so we heard a bunch of different ways to, you know, approach the semantic layer problem. And I think we relate to it the most because we're engineers, right? We
I love that the semantic fist is really like biased and opinionated. Yes. It's really fair towards the other vendors, yeah, that took the time.
So we have Artyom, co-founder, CEO.
We met Cube together at,
yes,
at Current.
Yeah. And I think Dorn and I was at kind of like the beginning of our DBT journey during this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were really wondering how it all interconnects. And I think right now it's way more, you know.
Yeah, it all makes sense.
It all makes
now
sense.
Everything now makes sense. That was the missing
piece. Hi, Artyom.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hey, it's really good to be here. So I'm excited to join podcast and talk everything about semantic layers.
Yes. can you present yourself? Like, tell us a little bit about your background and your role.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Artyom. I'm co-founder and CEO at Cube. I started Cube as an open source project. So I'm software engineer, worked a lot with the data. And in 2019, my co-founder and I, we started Cube with originally idea to build some sort of a semantic layer to help build embedded analytics. But in about like a year or 2 years from when we started to expand our offering to just build more like a general purpose universal semantic layer. So again, super excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me, and you know, like happy to chat everything about semantic layers.
By the way, I think Cube started off as a JavaScript kind of like
CubeJS.
CubeJS.
Right.
Now it's a different, like it's still CubeJS in GitHub, but like it's cube.dev or something. It's different, right? It's just Cube.
And I can tell you the whole story. So when we started an open source project, the name was Cube, because in Cube and the data modeling framework, the major entity is the Cube. You're essentially creating cubes as like an object that you build for abstraction for data modeling purposes. And the reason why we called it Cube, it's essentially multidimensional cube, right? So we were like, how do we call it? So we kind of decided to call it Cube. And then when it was time to open source a project, you know, like kind of and give it a name and all of that, we thought, how do we call it? We didn't find a better name. We just decided to call it a Cube.
Hey, but it's
then
a
if
cube.
We would go and
it's okay. Makes sense.
But then we thought, if you would go online and search Cube, you can find so many things. You know, like there is a movie called Cube. It's just right. A very
I love that movie. They're stuck in this endless cube. Oh my God. Oh my God, it's beautiful. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I also went to this how do you call it? Escape room.
Oh, there's like a cube escape. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really good. It was
nice.
Really good.
Yeah. So we were thinking, okay, maybe we wrote the code itself is JavaScript, was like just runtime of a Node.js. And the data modeling also wasn't a JavaScript. Now we do offer YAML and Python, but back then it was only JavaScript. So we thought, let's put a JS in a name. So we did that. I don't think that it was the best decision, to be honest. We got through the noise, so people were able to find us. But then people thought we had a charting library, because you have a chart.js, you have like a bunch of charting libraries that has a JS in the name. With it. Oh my! And people were like coming to us and saying, hey, can I build visualizations with Cube? Like, why? What? And that's at some point we thought, like, let's just get rid of a JS at all, because it doesn't really make sense to have it. And then later when we needed to incorporate a company, you know, like you cannot go and incorporate Cube Inc. It's impossible. So we needed something, you know, like to incorporate a company. So that's why we had a Cube Dev. So the company technically called Cube Dev Inc. And when we're thinking about the domain, we're sort of like, why just not to do like a cube.dev as a domain? So that's why we kind of have Cube.js, Cube, and a Cube Dev. Was from a kind of branding perspective, we usually just try to use a Cube, just a general name. At least now, you know, like if people would search Cube Data or something, we should be, you know, like on a front page, so it would be easier to search. But yeah, that's a story behind the JS.
Okay. So what kind of like, what is your product trying to solve? Like because there's like a whole bunch of things.
It's a matter of perspective.
Yeah. So what's your perspective on this?
Yeah. Lately when, you know, like people ask me, how would you describe, you know, like Cube is solving and in general, what is universal semantic layer? I usually say that, you know, like semantic layer is always a part of BI, right? Like in every BI tool, you would have a semantic layer that you really need to have. It's like in Looker, you have a LookML. In Superset, you might have like the object called dataset that gives you some way to sort of manipulate data sets. And then the semantic models in Power BI, you know, like data sources in Tableau, like essentially every BI tool has a semantic layer. And it's always been like that, right? Like business objects, they had a semantic layer in 90s, and they even had a patent for that. Not a lot of people know that, but they patented the semantic layer and this whole idea. And then MicroStrategy defended against it, like in early 2000s. So it's not like we all can do semantic layers right now. It's all like, you know, like it's not protected. So I think, you know, like if you look back again at business object and MicroStrategies, it was totally fine for them to have a semantic layer because they used to be only a single kind of a BI tool in the organization. But then when we started to have more and more ways to work and present data internally, externally to the end user, just to like so many different places, just so many different tools to work with data, we started to multiply semantic layer as well. We started to kind of spread these definitions across multiple places. Now you have something in a Looker, in a Power BI, and someone write a Python app, and you just kind of encoded some definition into SQL in a Python code, and so like so on, so on. So that's the idea that it's really hard to manage when it all spread. It's not dry, and dry in engineering means do not repeat yourself, right? It's just like one of the core principles. If you're repeating yourself, you're probably making a system error prone. So now we have a system on a scale that has a lot of repetition, and it means it's very error prone and it's going to be inconsistent. Now, what is the solution to that problem? Solution is just, as usual in engineering, take what you repeat and make it a common place, make it sort of, you know, like a place that all other system can go to and take the information and reuse. So you don't need to repeat yourself and put the definitions of the metrics in a single place. And that's the whole idea behind universal semantic layer, right? So you do a definitions of the measures, dimensions, everything in one place, and just expose it to all consumption data visualization tools.
Now it's like sorry just to cut you off, but it's like it sounds super basic, but I think it's like the one of the like aha moments that a new layer has been like presented to the world. There's a new like missing layer that should be like abstracted out from these like old school BI tools. And I think there's something like exciting about this, like the realization of it.
By the way, were you the first?
Yeah.
Were you the first company to extract it outside the BI tools?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think we're the best, but I'm the first. I think this idea was around for quite a while. There is like a company called AtScale. They started earlier than Cube. They're still around. They mostly target the larger enterprises, and that's why there is a buzz around them, but more like an enterprise segment. And when we go, you know, like to more like a modern stack segment, we don't hear a lot about AtScale. It's just because they're different target market.
They probably need a data stewardess. They require to have data stewardess.
Whenever you think about somewhere horrible, is like you think about data stewardess.
You have a lot of data stewardess there.
Right.
Data stewardess. Yeah, they store data.
So you sell mostly to more
cooler
tech companies or okay.
Yeah, cooler kids.
So what kind of like, so okay, so with your product, we're able to define the semantic layer, right? All the metrics, aggregations, different dimensions, like how the tables are joined, etc. Okay, what else do we get from the product? So we can just define it, and we can you said you can expose it. What does that mean?
Yeah, so you can define them in a cube, and the way you define it in cube, it's code first. So we are big believers in the idea that you need to manage your data and the data assets through the code first. That's, for example, the difference between AtScale and a cube, right? Like AtScale is like kind of older company that doing more like a visual, you know, like imagine business object universe style kind of data modeling, where like a cube is very like for the modern data engineers that used to write code, right? Like, and we have even term like analytics engineers too, that sort of, you know, like you're all in your VS Code or like Vim or like Emacs, right? And call it code. So the cube is for this kind of people. So it's all code. Essentially, when you define your measures dimensions, you write a code. Once you have your data model, you can expose the data model to different data consumption and data visualization tools through the APIs. So we have a REST API and a GraphQL API, which usually used if you want to build a kind of React app or maybe like a Python app, just kind of that takes data and presents data to some users. And that app could be internal, could be external. You would probably use REST API and GraphQL API. And
then just stop here. It's already really cool because like thinking about the data layer is something that can serve data applications, both internal and external. Is like it's really cool. Like we
and it makes perfect sense. Like it's
it does. And I think like we actually at Yotpo we had this entire process of getting there, and it took us years. Like we started off with, okay, we have Looker, and now we can embed it in different sites. But now we need it for other use cases, and at some point, I need something that's separate from whatever visualization I'm doing, and I need to be able to use it everywhere.
Yeah, it's really strange because I think that organizations have long understood that they need this like source of truth, and we talk about it all the time, and you have it like in the data modeling part, but it wasn't that obvious in terms of like data serving that you actually have another layer of like business logic that people don't invest enough to consolidate across the organization.
Yeah, I think even like data scientists like right now are so separated from the analytical decisions that like analysts are doing. They don't have any access to metrics when they're doing like they want to train their ML models, they want to look at different metrics, they have to rewrite the KPIs all over again in their own like notebooks. Like they don't have access to those.
I think they want to.
They want to. Oh,
I think,
yeah. Okay.
I think they
okay.
Want
maybe it's a different story. They just want. They want to use notebooks everywhere. I think that's like. It's the disease. Okay. Anyways, continue.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we have a REST API and a GraphQL API to expose data to this internal or external applications, and then we have a SQL endpoint, mostly to power BI tools or notebooks, but you also can just like spin up Python code. Bring a SQL alchemy and kind of hit our SQL endpoint. The SQL endpoint is essentially Postgres compatible endpoint, which takes a SQL you write and it applies the data model. It creates a completely new SQL. We call it a kind of a real SQL that is going to be executed against, say, your Snowflake. And then we'll send all of our data back to some BI tool. So that's usually being used with the BI tools. So that's a core, the data modeling and APIs for that. That's sort of core offering of the cube. On top of that, you ask about features, right? On top of that, we have, I would say, like two other layers of features. One layer is sort of like some governance or access control layer, because in many cases, when you expose your API, when you expose data in general through the REST API or like a SQL endpoint, you're exposing it to some third like party, whether it's internal like people or like some organization or something. So you need to be able to authenticate and authorize access, right? Because in many cases you need a row level access, you need a column level access. So you need to some sort of a layer that can identify who is making the request and then kind of apply specific rules. So Kube has a built-in system based on security context. It's essentially context that you can supply with your request to Kube. And then based on this context, you can modify the request on the fly, or you can modify the data model. So for example, you have specific metrics that might be available only to say executive team. And then the rest of the organization just cannot see that metric at all.
That also makes like perfect sense, because having this, a lot of the times the access management would be applied on like the actual Bito, whatever, like the frontmost point where people like interact with the data, but it actually makes a lot of sense to take that a step back and have it centralized, and like this is how people like interact with the data through the semantic layer, and this is where the access management is held.
The problem I think with this approach is like, it definitely makes sense, and I see why people would use it. I think in the long game, there are still access patterns that are outside a semantic layer. Like, let's take, for example, training an ML model. In some cases, you're actually going to access directly the files underneath. Maybe there's some unstructured data there. You're going to have to control access for that as well. And if you have that in that system and there's no other system that can centralize all of this, I think that's something that's missing. So I think it's a great feature to have for a semantic layer, but I still think we need something that's up on top of everything that maybe can orchestrate all of that.
No, I don't know. I'm thinking like it's complicated, but if you're going towards a place where you want like all the like data consumers to use only your like DBT gold models and on only like verified certified data, then it makes sense like to bottle this up
completely
all around the semantic layer, and maybe like machine learning or I don't know, different use cases that use, like maybe only specific personas should even have like access to raw data, right? It doesn't matter that much. I don't know, but
it makes sense.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, yeah, that was a really good conversation. I think you're spot on. Essentially, it's a question: is it data going through a cube, right? If it's a data going through the cube, that makes sense to have that access control. But then the question is: it realistic that all your data in your organization, in a large organization, will go through a cube? I wish, but you know, like probably no. And there's like so many use cases, so that's sort of a balance how we can kind of, you know, like control what goes through the cube and what governed through the cube.
By the way, our debate with Artyom in Corinth. We were talking about whether cube should just allow random access to DBT models that were not even part of a semantic layer. So let's say I just added a model. Should it be available in kubeSQL as a table now that I can query or not? And I think, by the way, it ended up being not. Like, Cube is not incorporating anything that is outside of the whatever was or cubes and views, right, if I'm correct. But again, it makes sense because you want things to be probably gold. You want the gold layer.
I like it. It's golder.
It's clean. It's more clean, I think.
You know. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a state of things today. I'm, you know, like, we're thinking a lot about it, whether, you know, like that should change or not. But I felt like the way we think currently about Kube is that it's a layer of curated data that gives you this access to the gold sort of kind of stage of the data modeling process.
I like it. Curated data. It's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay, so
the other set of features, like you talk about governance, and the other is like enhancements.
Yeah, the other is essentially caching and pre-aggregations. So yeah. I think
that,
you know,
also like I think that the other guys that we talked to don't support anything.
Yeah, they don't have that. That's actually, I think, if we talk about sorry, we are only stopping you.
No, go ahead. Explain. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Explain what it is, and we can talk maybe. Yeah.
I think with pre-aggregations, and essentially what are pre-aggregations are, it's aggregate awareness, right? So usually many BI tool will kind of give you a way to do like aggregate awareness. I think Looker calls it exactly like this. So the way to sort of build an aggregate table and store this aggregate table somewhere, and then a system knows. So if you send a query to the system, right, the system would know, oh, I have an aggregated data and I need to query the aggregated data instead of for raw data. So that's a general idea behind Kube pre-aggregations. We have our own storage for that because we figured people connect so many different data stores. And if you would store aggregated data back to the original data store, we just cannot really kind of control what's happening with that, you know, like how we write and how we read. Is it going to be available? Is it not going to be available? So having our own storage kind of gave us a little bit more control over that layer.
What do you use for that storage?
So we built it on top of Data Fusion, and a Data Fusion, it's an Apache Arrow implementation in Rust. So
listeners of the podcast are already aware of Data Fusion because I'm really obsessed about this project.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, so we built it on top of Data Fusion. We use it for SQL Parser and SQL Planner for our, what we call our Engine Kube store for that, like for aggregation storage. And then we have our own execution engine.
Oh, really? You're just using their interfaces? You're not actually using DataFusion's core execution engine?
Oh, we use only a parser and a planner. So we get to the point of the logical plan, and then we translate the logical plan into our physical plan, and then we execute that.
Why?
Why is that?
Well, we needed to build our own engine just to focus on specific use cases. So we deal with a lot of aggregated data and a lot of like aggregated style of queries, like a top K query, for example. That's very common. It's like, give me top 10 like most popular something based on some dimension, right? Like, this kind of query we really optimized our engine for, because that's what usually people query for pre-aggregations. And we also build it in a way that it's distributed. So the storage is per K file. So we just store everything in per K file as a storage, in the cold storage. And then we have a worker nodes. And the worker nodes, they are essentially doing the query in a distributed way. And they keep some of the data in SSDs that attach to the worker nodes, and that makes that sort of a hot storage. So way that's just very, very fast for this aggregated queries. But because we needed that architecture for that specific use case, we had to build it ourselves, that part. But SQL parser, the planner, it's all DataFusion.
Cool. I wasn't aware of that. But I told this before, but like we use pre-aggregation, work really well. I think we got like really good performance out of this, so it's like a really good feature. I think it helps.
And it's also important because like a lot of those BI tools, they have like we said before, like they have in like the built-in semantic layers, they have all this enhancements and like performance boosters. So it really make like the first thing I remember, because Liran implemented like a semantic layer before I did at Apo, and the first thing I asked was like, what do I need Looker for? Like if I have Cube, like what do I need it for? And like I don't need it anymore, basically.
Right. Yeah. Unless I mean, only for visualization and dashboards, right?
I use Looker API. I don't use the dashboards at all. So
okay. Yeah. Then you probably really don't need Looker
Actually, last time, in I think one of the other semantic layers, we talked about that. Yeah, we talked about that. Why do we need Looker anymore? And we talked about like there's something missing in the visualization world to actually go hand in hand with semantic layers like Cube or like others. Looker need LookML files. Superset still needs to have some data set configurations. Right. So you guys build plugins, right, that sync your configurations to theirs. But it's weird. Like, why do we need that configuration at all?
Because of them.
Yeah, because then, so I looked up and I saw like Cube's integration with other tools, and I came up with a bunch of, you can tell us about them, but like a bunch of new visualization tools where they actually integrate directly to Cube or to other semantic layers, and it's really nice. And they actually, the entire visual language is different, like the way you do the queries are different.
Yeah, so that's steep. Tool you're talking about, so they are building a new type of the BI tool that natively sits on top of semantic layer. So if organization has already a semantic layer or wants to implement, Steve naturally comes to the stack and provides a very unique experience of working with the metrics, working with the data in general, which is more like a semantic layer native. So I'm super excited about this newer generation. So we're talking to a few companies. I think Steve is doing really, really a good job, and they integrated with you.
Yeah, just go ahead and look at their demo. They have a demo, so you can just log in. And it's a beautiful, beautiful product, really. It's very cool, and cool you have it integrated. That's why you're part of the cool kids. You're already integrated with the coolest tool in town. So everything you just said is completely open source. So that's amazing. Like you can just take whatever you just said and you can just install it right now. It's all, there's Helm charts, there's everything already in store. There's a community out there, people loving this product as an open source.
We call it a Cube Core, so core features in there, in open source. Yes, that's correct.
So what is the commercial product that adds on top of that?
Yeah, good question. So commercial product, essentially, it's a fully managed version of a Cube. So you don't need to manage a lot of things. So you can just, you know, run it as a cloud product. It also gives you some additional features we have right now, and we're also working on some new additional features. So it is some of the features around just developer productivity. So something like some IDE, the GitHub integration. So you still can do all of that, but it just would require, you know, writing some code and kind of building your integrations. But we have that sort of all built in Kube. Then we have a query history. That's a way just to analyze your queries that are going through the Kube. So think about it more like a data dog, some observability features, but for your semantic layer. So you can fully control, you know, like the performance, analyze the slow queries, all of that. So a lot of customers find that useful. And we also have some specific BI integrations to synchronize the definitions of the metrics. So while you can do a query from, you know, you kind of mentioned that already, like if you want to do a superset, you probably need to synchronize Kube in a superset, right? Like if you want to do like Tableau, you need to synchronize the data sources in Tableau with Kube data models. So we have that feature in a cloud that kind of automatically runs it. If you want to do that in open source, and we have people doing this, you would just need to write some scripts that do that automatically for you.
So what's next for Kube?
It's a good question. Our main user right now at Kube is the data engineer. As you know, like older companies would call it a data steward. Essentially, people who are building data models, right? They would use Kube, they would build a data model, and they would expose that over APIs to data consumers. Now, there are like sometimes people asking a question. I built all my models in Kube. This is a set of curated data. I'm happy with that. But how do I tell my consumers what do they have? Like, what do they can query? It's like, how do they know about it? Where they should go? They should go to BI tool. They should go to some Google Doc that puts all the, you know, like information. Or they maybe should go directly to Kube so to see that. But Kube doesn't have any features to tell data consumers what data we have, right? So that's something that we are still thinking about and kind of working is like if a way for us to become closer to the data consumers where we say,
do you mean like a catalog or?
Yeah, it could be like a catalog, you know, like kind of a discovery platform that built for like assets that you create over Kube or curate over Kube, right? And kind of that shows you, oh, here you have that view in a Kube that's sort of a curated and that's here is a catalog. Here's like a chart or dashboard in the superset and in a Tableau that kind of connected to this. And this is how the data flows. So that's sort of what people wanted to see in Kube.
Can I tell you what I want to see in Kube?
Yes.
If I'm thinking like, what's the next step? And I don't know if you agree with me, Dawn. And,
I don't.
She already don't. But I think that you talked about Datadog before. And I like that. Like you said, look at your queries, look at operational, kind of like all the different metrics of what they're like, kind of have a debugging of audio for your queries and stuff. So that's cool. But I want to take it to the next step. Like I want to start treating metrics and KPIs as if they were operational, like we do in Grafana. So, or like we do in Prometheus. Like having the ability to automatically alert when something is off in my metrics is right now very hard in the semantic layer. It's right now actually, I don't even know how to do it. Like we can do some batch processing that, you know, samples the metrics every time, but what we have to do like some kind of anomaly detection on top of it. Like it's a very complicated thing. And I think a semantic layer, like once you build the metric, that's cool. Now you can view it, you can search it, you can create dashboards, you can create data products, which is amazing. But you're mostly interested in what happens when something goes wrong. And someone wants to be able to get notification when their metric, like let's say AR or something very generic, I'm an enterprise analyst and I want to be able to know when something is breaking in my metric. I want to be able to get that. I think in a way that the semantic layer should be the owner of this.
Can I answer before? Okay. I'm just not sure. Same for catalog, by the way. Like I'm not sure. Like I'm a big fan of like Kube to own this catalog, or should like an external data catalog. Same for this. I'm not sure. It makes sense, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, we can hear Artyom's.
Yeah.
Opinion,
okay. Now you.
I'm super glad to have this conversation right now because kind of, you know, like I'm on a podcast here, but I also get any customer feedback. I feel super efficient right now. And I'm having this conversation with a lot of like Kube users and Kube customers. And I'm like, should Cube own that, or should, you know, like Cube integrate with a different tool, like for catalog, you know, like we were doing like a bunch of integrations with the different catalogs. So we're still thinking, does it make sense for Cube to do that or not? In terms of, you know, testing the metrics, the KPIs and all of that, we're kind of getting into the observability and quality space, right? Should we just integrate with maybe Monte Carlo for that, right?
Yeah, I am agreeing with you both. Like, I think it is the realm of data quality, but I think it's kind of like the BI problem where like the new BI tools are still not there. There's one you just talked about, so we're missing that piece. Like Monte Carlo, Elementary, they are aware of data assets that are tables. They are not aware of metrics. They do not know what to do with that. They will treat it just like any other SQL. And I think that you have like a special knowledge about these things, and you can actually, it will require you to do something different about how you calculate metrics, because right now you kind of do it ad hoc, right?
Right.
You calculate metrics whenever someone requests it. And where in an alerting system, you have to do it constantly. So maybe we're thinking of a new streaming way of calculating metrics. I don't know. It's interesting. I see why it maybe not be part of the solution, but also like...
Think about it.
No, that feedback is always super helpful. Yeah, I think we think a lot about it. And we also try to think about it from a perspective of this LLM, because I felt like with Cube, it's a really unique opportunity, because again, we kind of own all of that information about the metadata, and we can just give it to the LLM model essentially and try to see what value it can bring to the table. And I think, you know, like I generally believe in generative AI as a technology. I'm not like, I don't think that, you know, like it's artificial general intelligence is like coming tomorrow or something, but it's useful already. And
for sure.
I feel like where it's useful, it can write code. It's really can write and execute code. And I was like playing with GPT-4 recently, just kind of sending like images and say, hey, crop to the content, and actually can write a Python script and crop to the content image, and it works. And Cube data models code. So it means like agents potentially can change a model, like maybe, you know, like debug, help find issues, maybe generate a tests automatically for this quality, or maybe do something else, because it's all like code first, and LLMs, they're really good at writing code. I think that's a secret sauce of the current LLMs.
Yeah, we actually, when we in ZipRecruiter, we did DBT, right? And we were writing unit tests, and they were kind of like, now they're going to have with the new version, they're coming out with a new unit testing way. It's all going to be part of the DBT core. That's really cool. That's coming out in the next version. But we used our own thing, and we used ChatGPT to generate the test data. It's amazing. It's like, this is something that, because like generating a cube model, that's something that's not very difficult to do. Like it's not, but generating test data, thinking about use case, like just remembering the different columns and what they mean and what.
Right, using ChatGPT just to like to create like the sanity.
The mock
like
data.
But mock data for different scenarios, like?
Yeah.
Nice, that's nice.
I'm lying right now. We just did it for like sanity.
Yeah, I knew you were lying.
It's just for sanity.
I knew you were lying. What a liar.
Of course.
Just
yes, of course we did it.
What a liar. He's trying to make me jealous.
Yeah,
he's,
I know.
He's lying. Okay.
I do that a lot. But yeah.
We don't work together.
Yeah, we don't work anymore.
We're competitors. We're competitors.
For now.
Yeah. I think this is really cool. It's like, it feels like, I don't know, the KPI that we are talking about, what we're striving for all the time, I think, building like the modern data stack and building like these like amazing data platforms is the survivability. And everything we can do to get things, like make them last, and like business logic and metrics and I don't know, I think all these different parts and how we structure our data platforms and the different like moving pieces being part of it, I think that's like the major like revolution. And I think this is really exciting, this whole approach and the way to think about things.
No, I'm super glad to hear that. You know, like I'm always, you know, like that's why we built this product. And, you know, like when I hear feedback like this, I just like, oh my God, yeah, I'm so happy in this. So thank you.
Do you have customers in Israel?
For the commercial offering.
We do have commercial customers in Israel, yeah.
Israelis are the worst, right? They complain all the time. They want stuff. They argue. They're sassy.
I don't know, to be honest. I don't think so. I mean, it's...
Yes. I'm an Israeli customer. I'm horrible. You can't say that. You can't. You love your Israeli customers.
don't ever have Doron as your customer.
I'm a horrible customer. Really, I'm horrible.
Yeah, someone just told me today that whenever she talks to them, they get scared. Like, they're scared of talking to her. Like, genuinely.
I'm super nice. Super friendly.
All right. Thank you, Artyom, for being here.
Thank you.
Amazing. Bye-bye.
Thank you. That was great. Thank you for having me today.